I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. Protests break out over a statue honoring a man who some say shouldn't be honored anymore, while others say his legacy is part of our nation's history. It's a story we've seen unfold many times here in the U.S. This next version of the story, though, is happening in Canada. Sir John A. Macdonald is celebrated as Canada's founding father, but it turns out his legacy is darker than many Canadians like to remember. Here's Emily Russell with that story.
Peter Gower says you can think of Sir John A. Macdonald this way, like two legendary American presidents rolled into one.
It's a Washington in terms of saying we're going to become independent. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how many battles we lose or what happens. In a way, though, it's also an Abraham Lincoln in saying, no, this is the only way to go about things.
We're in Kingston, Ontario, a university town northwest of the New York border. And in a park on the edge of downtown is a 20-foot-tall bronze statue of Macdonald. He looks strong and stern, kind of how you'd expect a founding father to look. Gower is in the park with fellow Kingston Historical Society member Warren Everett. Everett says Macdonald is the reason Canada exists.
People have to ask themselves the question, what would this place be if there had not been a Sir John A. Macdonald?
Macdonald led the country to independence from Britain in 1867. He was Canada's first prime minister, in office for nearly 20 years. There are streets and schools named after Macdonald, his face on Canada's $10 bill. But now there's this.
It has been a raw debate in this country in recent months. The place of Sir John A. Macdonald in Canadian history. His legacy as Canada's first prime minister is tremendous, but that legacy, we know, includes the creation of the residential school system.
Under Macdonald's leadership, Indigenous children were taken from their homes and families and forced into state-sponsored boarding schools run by Christian missionaries. Investigations found that children were sexually and physically abused, punished for speaking their native language.
My name is Natasha Sturritt. I'm Armiskin Cree from Alberta, and I grew up in the Cornwall-Akwesasne area.
Sturritt's grandmother was sent to a residential school. Sitting in a coffee shop in downtown Kingston, Sturritt says people need to look more clearly at Macdonald and his legacy.
You can't just compartmentalize a person and be like, well, he was this and that. I mean, no. You have to look at him as an entirety. You can't just pick and choose the parts that you like about him and the parts that you don't.
In 2015, a comprehensive report by Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission found residential schools carried out widespread cultural genocide, shining a light on Macdonald's tainted legacy. But for some, the report's finding doesn't go far enough.
They defined it as cultural genocide because that was what was going to make white Canadians comfortable and okay with it.
Krista Flute is Lakota. She grew up here in Kingston.
But under international law, it is defined as genocide. Not cultural genocide, just genocide. And Canadians need to grip that.
More than 150,000 Indigenous children were sent to residential schools since Macdonald's time. An estimated 6,000 children died in the system. That history has inspired protests and vandalism of Macdonald statues all across Canada, like in Montreal in August.
The statue of Canada's first prime minister splattered with red paint. Cleaning crews are already here to help start cleaning things up.
Out west in the city of Victoria, local officials took down Macdonald's statue outside City Hall this summer. It's expected to be moved to another public space. Here in Kingston, the debate is even more complicated. This is where Macdonald grew up and got into politics. He's kind of like a hometown hero. So it was a big deal when Paul Fortier decided to erase Macdonald's name from his downtown pub.
We said, let's just change the name slightly. So rather than Sir John's Public House, it became the Public House.
A stereotypical Canadian response, polite with an emphasis on keeping the peace. But Fortier says this debate over Macdonald's legacy has gotten as heated as the ones in the U.S.
I was receiving death threats. Overnight, there would be people who would phone and leave messages on the answering service, saying, look out, watch your back, you're gonna be a goner kind of thing.
People are angry on both sides. If you take a statue down or remove Macdonald's name, some here see that as a betrayal of Canada's history. If you leave it up, keep everything as is, others will tell you that's an insult, a cover-up. There are people, though, looking for a middle ground.
I'm Jennifer Campbell. I'm the manager of cultural heritage for the city of Kingston.
The city is deciding what to do with that big bronze statue. They've been taking comments and planning community forums. Campbell says from what they've heard, most people want the statue to stay. but they want McDonald's story told more honestly.
I would say the majority really do seem to be calling for add to the history and better tell it, as opposed to anyone saying, you know, don't touch anything and never make a change.
So plaques and other signage that tell McDonald's entire story, including his treatment of Canada's Indigenous. As for Natasha Sturrett, whose grandmother was sent to a residential school, she says the compromise is a cop-out.
So on the surface, Canada wants to seem like it's working with Indigenous people. Canada wants to seem like, you know, it recognizes Indigenous sovereignty and nationhood and things like that. But we know different.
The impact of McDonald's policies, Sturrett says, is still unfolding. There are higher rates of poverty and lower rates of employment among Canada's Indigenous. Battles continue over land rights and access to natural resources. And the trauma of the residential schools is still fresh. The last one didn't close until 1996. For The World, Emily Russell, Kingston, Ontario.